The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 9th of June, 2021. On the podcast today, Derek Liu, Executive Chairman of Blue Star Capital, discusses the progress of Investi blockchain fintech company Satoshi Pay and Dynasty Esports. Plus, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about China and the following companies: Cornish Metals, Empire Metals, Anglo-American, Nkondesi Energy, and Makango Resources. Plus, at the end of the podcast, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. By the way, you can check out top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. Plus, lots of other content, including Plant Healthcare's ProAct delivers solid results in Spanish trials. Article there from Francesca. Your Gene Health signs multi-year license with US precision medicine firm. There's an article on Cloud Coco, hails another period of significant progress in H1 2021. And Nexo Group's trading continues in line with expectations. Dev Clever secures first material local contract in India. And of course, always worth checking out, the risers and fallers in our COVID-19 index. Up, top riser today is React Group, up 8% to 3.6 pence. Our biggest faller is N4 Pharma. It's down 8% to 8.75 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Derek Liu, Executive Chairman of Blue Star Capital. BLU is ticker. Derek, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to be with you.
Yeah, and you've had some bits of news coming out on your portfolio companies there, your investments, and we'll get into that in a bit. As always, Derek, for people who may be new to the podcast or haven't heard of Blue Star Capital, just give them a brief overview of what you're about, please, if you could.
Yeah, Justin, happy to. The great thing about Blue Star Capital is our portfolio approach to investing. So unlike individual investors where you make an investment in one or two companies and your outcome is binary, we have taken a portfolio approach. We currently have a portfolio of roughly six or seven esports companies. We've identified the esports sector as high growth. Get in early. We've been in esports since fall of 2019, and we've been following the growth curve since.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's get into, first of all, Satoshi Pay. A bit of news there on an R&D grant. Can you explain that, please?
Yeah, well, I mean, we just spoke about the esports, but also we're in other high growth sectors as well, Justin, including the blockchain with Satoshi Pay. And Satoshi Pay has just come out with a really exciting announcement, and it's about the way that the blockchain is used. So, for example, decentralized finance, DeFi, a phrase I think everyone's heard a lot of in the last 6 to 12 months. As an industry, it's grown over 20-fold in 2020 alone. And if you think about that, that means it's reached $60 billion U.S., $60 billion U.S. in total value locked in smart contracts as of May of 2021.
Wow.
But this growth, Justin, this growth is notwithstanding the fact that there are still manual bits to connect the blockchain to you and I as consumers. It's high friction still. Currency transactions, still high friction, still require the active involvement of currency traders for each transfer as market makers. So imagine if there were a way to utilize all the different types of DeFi protocols with a focus on fiat tokens, including automatic market makers, that would enable foreign exchange without middlemen, or lending protocols for instant on-demand liquidity in different currencies. And that's exactly what Satoshi Pay has just announced, that they are to receive an R&D grant from the Stellar Foundation to do just this. They're going to develop a protocol, a proof of concept for the Pendulum Network. What's the Pendulum Network, you ask? It's essentially a second layer blockchain that's going to connect the Stellar Network to the wider DeFi ecosystem. The Pendulum Network is going to include bridges to Ethereum and Polkadot. And why is that exciting? It's exciting because of Satoshi Pay's own D-transfer. Imagine, the D-transfer is designed to create or to lessen the friction by creating an easy way to exchange money across national borders. Mm-hmm. With the Pendulum Network, that final step of converting the The Stellar token to the Stellar Lumen to fiat is automated, reducing the need for market makers and automating the entire process.
Wow. That's, yeah, it's big news, and it's a big future. Who hasn't heard of DeFi? And we all know it's coming. And so let's move on to eSports then. Dynasty, a fair amount going on there. Can you give us an update, please, Derek?
Well, Justin, I appreciate you saying Dynasty for me. I wanted to say Dynasty yeah. for you and your listeners. I mean, we updated everyone on Dynasty in our last portfolio update, but Dynasty isn't standing still. Following on their announcement, 5 million raised on 50 million post money. Last week, they announced some pretty exciting news with respect to getting ready for their announced listing on the or planned listing, excuse me, on the Australian Stock Exchange. They've bolstered their senior executive ranks by adding two pretty impressive individuals. One of them, David Baxby, was joining Dynasty as chairman. He spent the last 25 years building up businesses in the Asia Pacific region with the Virgin Group. And he was, in fact, at one point co-CEO of the Virgin Group, a $6 billion enterprise. They've also added, as Chief Customer Officer, Daniel Horan. He's got 20 years of experience in telco in the region. And most recently, what's most interesting, I think, for Dynasty and, and us as investors is Daniel's experience is in the space of platform-based commercial partnerships. So in his roles with his telcos over the last 10 years, he's done commercial partnerships with the likes of Spotify, Disney, Netflix and the NBA. So we're really excited with what Dynasty's done here. Their ability to attract this caliber of executive really serves for us here at Blue as a validation that Dynasty is a company that's positioned for success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff, Derek. Lots going on there. So if you could, three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add Blue Star Capital to their watch list, please.
Well, Justin, I sure hope that everyone's listening today will add us to their watch list. We're an exciting company to watch for three key reasons. One is the exposure to the high growth markets that we just talked about, esports, blockchain. The other reason would be our portfolio performance in 2020. If you look at the way our portfolio has performed in 2020, NAV is up $4 million since January of 2021. And the third reason, speaking of NAV, is our current discount to NAV at 17.5%. Or 0.175p, we're trading at a considerable discount to NAV, and that's an opportunity for all the investors right there.
Excellent stuff. Good to chat to Derek, and as usual, hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Really appreciate it, Justin. Great to be with you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good. Thank you.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm feeling, I had a bad back, right? And my wife said there were some painkillers in there. I had a while back. They're quite strong. Take one of those. And they knocked me for six last night. I couldn't wake up in the morning. and still now, I'm still dizzy. I don't know what they were, but phenomenal. I thought, well, you know, maybe I shouldn't take those. And I think the lesson of the story is only take medication prescribed to you, because I don't know how she handled those at all. But have you ever had that? Taking painkillers so strong, they make you woozy and odd.
I was given one once when I had a particularly nasty food poisoning. It made me feel so good, I decided I would never take another one of those.
Yeah,
again.
That's the thing. It does make you feel like in a different world. At last, I tried to, you know, I always go to bed and read my Kindle. And I think I got to about two pages. My eyes started going as, whoa, it's really hard work. I woke up this morning. You hit the snooze button about 20 times. I did that this morning. Come on, get up. Anyway, okay, let's talk about things more related to the market, I suppose, rather than medication, which I suppose most people are on these days, especially world leaders. But copper and tin, lead, metal prices, despite they're rising in China, inflation in China. And what's happening in China, John? You've got a lot of things in your newsletter this morning.
Yes, well, there's a lot going on in China. It's a big place. And I think, weirdly enough, the view that we have of China from here is pretty good. We tap into lots of different news sources. Mm-hmm. And experts to get our view on them. And we see that PPI, producer price inflation, is up 9% year on year. Now, of course, remember, all the year on year stats are slightly skewed because last year everyone was suffering with the coronavirus. But the price inflation numbers are real. The CPI number is also up. And this is worrying the Chinese authorities because they see this as driven by underlying rises in commodity prices. And commodities are strong. Tin, nickel, copper prices are all up overnight. That's good. And the demand is there. There's been a bit of negative news flow, which I think might have been put out by some agencies. We know that long funds have been long of copper, and so mainly copper really, and they've been liquidating some of those long positions and just moving into other things. But in reality, there's nothing wrong, I think, with the super cycle at the moment. The Chinese are touching the brakes ever so slightly. They're reported to be looking at trying to slow down the pace of land development in China. But it's only a little bit of slowing. It doesn't mean that they're going to stop the growth. I think the growth is going to continue because they have these stated policies of improving the lot for everyone in China, particularly the poor people. In order to do that, in order to get these people out of the villages and into the towns, they've still got to build more apartments, more houses, mainly apartment blocks, to be honest. And then they've got, having built those, they have to fit them out. So they've got to, you know, put the door handles and the bathroom fittings on, and then the kitchens and all the other bits and pieces that people have to live in those sorts of apartments.
Yeah, thinking of China, right, how do we know, you know, what to believe? Because they're very careful on what they report, and they're very careful on how they report it. So, you know, we know sometimes, some of the GDP figures, you think, well, I don't know if that's true, because the private versions of those numbers are often different. And I think, it's essentially what they want to share with us, isn't it? How do we judge if they're accurate or not?
Well, I think like any communist state, their statistics are relatively accurate. In fact, probably more accurate than in the Western world.
Well, even if they're bad, because they wouldn't want to share them if they're bad, because the last thing they want to do is make their leaders there seem bad or doing a bad job.
The GDP number that you're referring to is a different matter, because that's that is a matter of national pride. But I think all the other statistics, the PPI, CPI, et cetera, are accurate. The GDP, of course, was a target that was set. And then all the local provinces were targeted with certain specific targets of their own, and they had to somehow achieve those targets. And if they didn't, they could get in trouble. So getting in trouble in China is not a lot of fun.
No,
yeah, it can involve hard labour.
No, but what I'm saying is, if they manipulate certain figures, then why wouldn't they manipulate all figures to make them look good? Because it's all down to that, making them look good, isn't it? Because, I mean, you said, and I say this now, is when you're looking at comparisons of companies' figures, even fundamentals, you have to be careful, because a growing company maybe wouldn't have grown last year, of course. So you have to take a pinch of salt, 2020. But even 2020, the pandemic, didn't seem to hit China. And it started there, and we still don't know what's happening there. And their figures for the deaths are way below, way, 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 ridiculously laughable, laughably below where they should be, considering the population. They didn't have a vaccine, and it started in a city bigger than London. And so I don't understand where we can draw the line between them knowing what's going on and actually what they report. You know, so I find it very opaque, the Chinese reporting and the system.
You're right, but we use the statistics that we get, and then we effectively cross-check that with other bits of news that we see to form a picture of consistency. And again, you're right on how they control things, because we were following the development of the coronavirus in January last year, and then suddenly the shutters came down on all the news flow coming out of China. It was literally overnight. They put an end to any news on COVID-19 and coronavirus infection. And that's pretty shocking how a state can actually control something like that.
Yeah, because even now you don't really hear of them having any problems with it, but they must do. Every other country in the world is having a problem with it, you know, especially.
There is news from one of the provinces that they've got 300 cases of COVID.
Yeah, exactly, 300 cases. They are like, what are they? Well, 1.5 billion population. You know, we're 60 million, 66 million. We got, I think 4,000 cases. And they've got 300. Doesn't make any sense.
China was already set up to deal with an epidemic, because they've had previous epidemics roughly every 5-10 years, they seem to get a different epidemic of some sort. If you remember bird flu, they've had African swine fever going around. That, of course, that's an agricultural thing. But they've had a number of these things that they've controlled extremely well in China. So they have a very well-developed healthcare system for controlling these sorts of things. Now, they were also pretty quick on creating some of their own vaccines as well. Not to say those vaccines are that good, but they were fast off the mark and they were ready for it. Whereas, sadly, in the UK, our vaccine manufacturing facilities had been chopped up and taken off to Poland and Eastern Europe.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but even so, when you don't have a vaccine, you can lock down as much as you want, but as soon as it starts catching, there must have been a month at least before they even realised. Like, they try to silence people who said there was a pandemic, there was a new virus around, and they try to silence them, and there must have been a month of it spreading. And we know how fast it can spread in a month if you're acting normally and you're socially interacting with people, and yet, it's the figures just don't add up, I think. And I suppose one place you can sort of judge them quite accurately, I suppose, is when you've got an external company involved, like in your newsletter today, Tesla. Then I suppose you can trust the figures from Tesla, can't you? Because obviously that's a listed company in the US.
Yes, and they get in a lot of trouble if they manipulated those numbers. Although companies do manipulate numbers from time to time, and sometimes the CEO takes a fall as a result. But Tesla sold 33,000 vehicles that were made in their Chinese factory in May. That was a 29% increase on the prior month. So that's
a
good.
just a big jump, isn't it? Well, a third up almost on the previous month. Wow, that's amazing.
Well, and get this, in China as a total, new electric vehicles, it was 177% growth in May to 185,000 cars. So that's year on year, 177% growth. Now, again, some of that affected by the pandemic, probably accelerating that number. But also, in China, as we've seen in Asia, once they get the idea of buying into something new, they really go for it. And we know that Chinese automotive manufacturers are kind of ahead of the game. The Chinese government has been pushing really hard and incentivizing them to build lots of battery factories. And for, I imagine every single Chinese automotive manufacturer has a range of new electric vehicles.
Yeah. I'm just trying to compare. So we're looking at the figures there. You said that 185,000 cars
in May.
Yeah, I'm just looking at I know in the UK, a total of 108,000 were sold in the year 2020. So they've done more in May. I mean, they double what we've done in May in an entire year in the UK.
So China will clearly sell something over 2 million electric vehicles this year.
Yeah.
And if the growth carries on like this, it'll be a lot more. I think we're going to see this around the world. I think this is one case where all the hockey stick charts are probably going to look true. In fact, in some cases, they look like they're underestimating the growth, which is very rapid. And we're in touch with a number of manufacturers who are involved with this, talking about the supply of commodities, raw materials for their supply chain.
So
it's all very real.
In fact, touching on that and supply chains and all that stuff and metals, this leads nicely into Cornish metals, I suppose. CUSN. What's the news there, John?
Well, they've increased their resource statement for the South Crofty tin mine, where I used to work, actually, as a student.
Oh, right.
That's where I cut my mining teeth. So they've been drilling into that, and they've got a fairly substantial increase the resource to 2.08 million tonnes, grading 1.59% tin. That's very nice. And then another 1.94 million tonnes, with a grade of 1.67% tin. Now, what I find interesting and exciting about Cornish metals, and I've invested in this myself, is that for me, because it's going to take a while to dewater the old South Crofty mine, they are drilling a new project which we call United Downs. And they had very good previous drill results from United Downs. In fact, it was drilled by Cornish Lithium, who made the discovery by accident. But thankfully for Cornish Metals, they actually own the license for tin at that site. So I think there'll be a mine at United Downs in the next few years. I think the local authorities will be extremely keen to help that forwards. In fact, the Cornish County Council has invested in Cornish metals. I think what will happen is there'll be a first mine built at United Downs, and then South Crofty will come along a few years after that, and I think that'll be fantastic. Both United Downs will be a new mine, although it's very close to existing underground infrastructure, and the South Crofty mine, the mine is already there. It just needs to be pumped dry and refurbished.
To look at the chart there, not doing too badly. There was a listed IPO there at 16th of Feb, 10 pence. They dropped down to sort of just above 8, and now they're at 15. So where did you invest? The IPO or Johnny?
I invested at the IPO price.
Oh, that's okay.
I can't wait to see the drill results because, I mean, I would be pretty shocked if they missed the mineralization. We don't know exactly where all the mineralization is. That's what the drilling is designed to see how much there is and what the grades are. Very high copper grades as well as high tin grades, which is particularly interesting. So there could be more value in this than shall we say we've envisaged. And if they hit more copper, I like to think the share price will carry on going up.
Yeah. Well, the share price that isn't going up of late, it's going down. Empire Metals, EEE ticker. What's happening there, John?
Oh, they're selling off, or they've sold off their assets in Georgia. Now, this is a terrible shame. And the moral of this story is don't deal with Russians. I hate to say, I know that's a gross generalization, and there's some wonderful Russian companies out there like Island Gold. But actually, Empire Metals, they had a 50-50 joint venture with a group in Georgia run by some Russians, and that was all going very well. They immediately made a good discovery where they discovered gold and copper in economic quantities and economic grades. And, you know, in reality, they should be worth something over $100 million by now just for their 50% share. But unfortunately, the Russians were very obstructive. And then the Georgian government became obstructive as well. And actually, when the license ran out, normally a license will run for a certain number of years, and then the government will normally just renew those licenses. They'll ask a couple of questions and renew the license. But in this case, the government decided to sit on the license approval, and in fact, in the end, withdrew it. So there's nothing much that Empire could do about that. Unless you want to mount a coup and overtake the government, you're a bit stuck.
Yeah. Well, what I've learned from investing is, investing is about risk and reward. We all know that. But you can control certain risks. And that's why, one of my filters investing is about jurisdictions, It's always worth looking where you're investing. And that's why I try to avoid, jurisdictions that have a questionable record, because it's a known risk. It's a risk you can avoid. And so it's one of those things that I think, well, why take the risk? There's no point. There's plenty of opportunities in the market to invest into without having to take on risk you know about, because there will be risks you don't know about that'll come from left field. It can be anything from specific risks to, general market sell-off or pandemics, whatever. So in my mind, control the risks you can control and then take it from there,
Well, anyway, the good side of this is Georgian Mining have got $3.3 million in cash from the Russian partners, and they can they're investing that in Australia. They've got a couple of new projects there. The Eclipse project near Kalgoorlie is looking quite nice, so they're already working up resources on that.
And the jurisdiction, see, Australia jurisdiction, a lot safer, a lot more transparent, isn't it?
It is, and actually Australia has turned out to be a surprisingly good continent for mineral discovery, and the government is supportive, the legislation works, so long as you don't go blowing up Aboriginal caves, then actually everything should work for you.
Yeah, well, that's in a theme here, John, because the next company I want to talk about is all about ESG, and you're right, Dale, with Empire now, they've got cash from that, they've exited a dodgy, questionable jurisdiction, and now they're in a transparent jurisdiction, which you can predict better. And talk about Anglo American, you want to mention, because they've done exited coal, have they, or something?
Yes, they've spun out their coal division. It's I think it's exclusively South African coal mines. They're not long life mines by the sounds of it, but they've been accused of greenwashing by doing it. Of course, the ESG movement is so big, the sort of environmental, social and governance movement is so important now, that if you want big investors to continue to hold your shares, you've got to decarbonize. And that means getting rid of the coal mines. So Rio Tinto did this just over a year ago. BHP are looking at doing it, and Glencore as well. Remember, a lot of the cash made in Glencore over the years has been from their coal business. But the movement of into decarbonisation is so big that these companies are being are deciding to sell their coal mines. Now, the thing about the new float that's been spun out by Anglo American called Thungela Resources is that they've already, I think there's only one way for these shares to go, and because the existing shareholders have been given shares in Thungela Resources, but a lot of them can't hold them because it's just coal. I mean, that's the whole point of the spin out, is to satisfy the investors that don't want to hold coal. So there's automatically a lot of sellers for this business.
Yeah,
and I think the brokers are very bravely holding the share price up, but I've got the feeling that's going to collapse. And there's already a short selling group out there called Boatman Capital, who suggests the company is drowning in its liabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but isn't this a lesson to be learned though? Because you've got to follow the money, haven't you? And it's happened with coal, like I said, and oil. When you see these big sovereign funds selling out and the money divesting their investments in these areas, you've got to take note of that. And I see private investors holding on to companies sometimes, and I've seen a lot of people question all stocks that aren't valued where they should be, apparently. And I think, well, there's a reason for that, because there's money outflow massively. And so they'll probably never be valued now on what they used to be valued on before ESG came in, because that's the price you're paying. They're paying a carbon tax, pretty much. And so that's it. And so, in fact, another one I saw recently, I know it was quite popular with investors, we had on the podcast, was Nkondesi Energy. And I've not kept an eye on the news and stuff, but they did have that big, massive coal project, power station in Mozambique. And it seemed to take forever and a day to get things signed up because they had two big corporations involved in the funding of that. It was taking for a long time to get them to agree at the same timeline. And I've seen just recently they just announced, a while back they announced it, but the update on a solar battery sort of pipeline update thing. So they're heading towards that now, and it's just a lesson to learn, isn't it? When you see big movements and trends, macro trends like that, you've got to take note, because eventually the money will flow from the big corporations, the funds will pull their money, and that'll affect the sentiment, the valuations of these businesses, isn't it?
Well, yes, it will. So, the fact is, the world still needs the coal mines to keep the lights on. I mean, unfortunately, China is still building coal-fired power stations. I mean, it's also building an awful lot of solar and wind farms, but it's still building coal-fired, and presumably a lot of that will get turned off as they bring on new nuclear power stations. But as we know, nuclear takes a long time to commission, and it's extremely difficult. In fact, in the UK, I read in the Times that we're going to decommission 5 out of 8 nuclear reactors in the next few years because corrosion has meant that they're simply unrepairable. So let's hope we decommission those before anything goes wrong. And the problem is, we're going to have to build a lot more windmills very quickly in order to replace that nuclear capacity, because we're not bringing in nuclear capacity very fast. It's not possible to suddenly accelerate those projects. And I think the only thing that we're quite good at the moment is building wind farms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, do you know what? There's a need. Like I said, still, there's this gap that we need to bridge energy-wise between the older industries like coal and the newer industries, renewables. But even though that exists, and we still have need for these older industries, the valuations of the companies involved with those will go down. So, for example, as a crude example, if you previously valued a big coal producing company on a PE of 10, for example, now that will go down. That PE will go down because they realise it's a dying industry. No one wants to touch it, and so it'll be derated a little downwards, you know, and so the valuations of the business suffer, and that's why the share prices go down. So even though I've heard people say about all companies, you know, they should be valued a lot higher. I don't know if it will anymore, because that's the way, you know, the industry's going. It's a downward trend, you know?
I think you're right, because I think for many of these funds, there's no price that they will want to own the share at.
Exactly. So, exactly.
I think every week there's going to be a new seller. And yes, there'll be people who come in and buy it because they like the yield and things like that. But the number of funds that will be allowed to come in and buy that stock will be less and less.
Yeah, absolutely. So pay attention, I think the lesson here is pay attention to the mega trends. Because in the end, it goes one way. You can follow a trend. Like I said, a rising tide lifts all boats. As the tide drops, brings other boats. So there we are. Anything else, John, worth chatting about?
I think worth mentioning Macango. Mm-hmm. They've got plans for a rare earth separation plant in Poland. Mm-hmm. You want to site these plants near where you can get the chemicals for the rare earth processing. So this is they found a site. Which clearly works. Poland is the EU's second largest manufacturer of nitrogen and compound fertilizers, and therefore it's a major chemicals producer. So this makes a good site for a rare earth separation plant. That looks like it's where it's going to go. So it's going into a special economic zone there. Well done, Macango, on pushing ahead with that side of things, because that's how you're going to add value to the rare earths. And also, what we need the rare earth processing to be done in the West. So much of it is done in China or in countries very close to China, that we're very worried about where we're going to get the neodymium and praseodymium from. So much so, I mean, the White House has just launched a new, well, we would call it a task force, but they've called it something more aggressive.
Yeah.
So they're setting up a strike force. I'm not sure what they're going to strike at exactly, but
all the names taken from some sci-fi films. Do you remember this? What was it? The vaccine task force, a hyper force. It's all from sci-fi, isn't it? It's in the Americans, they're born, they exist in the movie industry.
Well, I love it really, because I mean, a strike force sounds like it's actually going to strike at something. Yeah. It's going to combat unfair Chinese trade practices. Looking for specific violations. They're considering initiating what they call a Section 232 investigation into the national security impact of neodymium magnet imports, which mainly come from China. So China will be the target there. Because, of course, this is so important. I mean, your average, the wind farms being developed now offshore in the UK have 7 tons of permanent magnets per turbine. And we're trying to find out exactly how much neodymium and praseodymium goes into each of those magnets, but it's quite a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah. Do you know, Operation Warp Speed was the vaccine task force in America. Operation Warp Speed, and that's something like Captain Kirk would say, wouldn't it? Do you know what? Looking at just the commodities, look at Nkondesi's chart compared to Macango's chart. Nkondesi's, going from top left to bottom right. The Macango's is the other way around, you know, so follow the trend there. It's done very well, actually, Macango's. Was it, what, 5 pence in October? And now it's at 29 pence? It's done very well, isn't it?
Well, Macango had sat there, its share price had languished for some years.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like nothing was happening. But they were working, you know, the team were working away behind the scenes. They just realised that nobody was really listening. And, of course, the world has suddenly woken up to the fact that rare earths are a problem and we need a lot more supply. And if you look at Macango, Rainbow Rare Earths, Pensana and a few others, you can see that they're all going a bit better. But I've been calculating, doing some numbers on some of these companies, and I think there's a lot more value to be had out of these. I think they've only really just started.
Mm-hmm. More stuff. John, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Kodal Minerals, down 4% at 0.287. At 4, Hummingbird Resources, down 2.45% at 20.88. At 3, Keras Mineral Resources, it's up 1.24% to 24.5. At 2, Net Scientific, down 13% to 157. It's an excellent run there of late. And at 1, Tirupati Graphite PLC. It's up 18.70% to 107.5. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Dev Clever Holdings, Progress in India. At four, Tomco Energy, Greenfield Conditional Site Purchase Agreement. At three, Remote Monitor Systems, Final Results. At two, Avacta Group, Holdings and Company. And at one, Remote Monitor Systems, Proposed Transfer of Gyrometric Systems Limited. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.